On this episode of Balance and Manifest, Your Rise to Greatness, we are joined by Kristen Cattell as we talk to our very own Savannah. Sav grew up raising sheep on her ranch and was a three-sport athlete, playing softball, volleyball, and soccer. She also grew up taking care of her mom, who was battling severe injuries, which had a major effect on Sav's mental health. Sav opens up about the injury that ended her pursuit of a college sports career, her time in ROTC, and we discuss the birth of her life motto, Balance and Manifest. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy our first episode. Welcome to another episode of Balance and Manifest, Your Rise to Greatness, the podcast where our guests share their stories of overcoming hardship and fighting their way to success to help inspire and motivate others. I am your host, Sean.
And I'm Sav.
And I'm Kristen.
And Kristen's in the house tonight.
I just introduced myself right over you.
That was
make
perfect.
Make yourself at home.
Oh, always.
So for listeners, do us a favor, subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you listen to. Subscribe, like, listen, share. If you could do us a huge favor and rate the show, the better ratings we get, 5 stars would be amazing. The higher we go in the ratings, the more people we reach, the more stories we get to more people. And as always, show is presented by Nine Realms Athletics. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Use promo code MANIFEST for a discount.
Woo.
So today is our first episode, not our, we just did one. The one before is the intro. This is our first actual episode.
Yeah.
And Kristen is here for the first episode.
I'm so honored.
It's so exciting.
I feel so special.
Got microphones. And a little bit of whiskey. Yep. How's that Jameson Stout?
I have to admit, I was a little judgy before I sipped it, just because JMO was my college drink. But this is actually not bad.
And you have, I don't know what that is. It's the
blood orange whiskey. It's like sweet. It's weird. It's not like
it's a little thick.
Straight bourbon. It's like basic.
It's like college bourbon. Girl whiskey.
Yeah.
You're so fancy.
Yeah.
Well, so thank you guys for tuning in. We're really excited about the show. We have a lot of fun episodes lined up. So this is going to be really cool. We're hoping to get some stories out to people and hopefully help change some lives,
motivate some people. Absolutely. That's kind of the whole premise of our show. And, you know, I'm going to be telling my story tonight. So. I'm like a dude. I don't like talking about feelings. So this is going to be kind of hard. Just bury it down deep. Don't talk about feelings. So
like we said in the beginning, we want to be super transparent.
Absolutely.
And the best way for us to do that is to share our stories. And I will share mine later. I have a few reasons why I can't do it at this point. But that will be told down the road. To be fair and transparent with people, we're going to go in depth with our personal lives and share them with you. So we're not just blowing smoke out people's butts and using other people's stories for things. So,
well, and a lot of translation kind of comes over from Nine Realms Athletics. Our motto is Balance and Manifest. And that part of it really stems from my story. And it means a lot to me. The fact that we have it on a piece of clothing is baffling to me. You know,
a couple pieces
almost 10 years later that I've kind of used that throughout my life to make sure I stay on track with things. So, I mean, kind of starting at the beginning, my kind of an overview is the beginning of my dark times, I would say. I was 17, but a lot of that was led up to that by kind of my mom's situation. She has and had at the time a degenerative back failure, kind of started when she was younger and progressed as she got older, you know, but really got bad when I was in middle school. And then there was a significant event that happened in my parents' relationship where trust and honesty was really broken and loyalty was broken. So their relationship changed drastically. And I feel like that kind of translated over into her injuries as well. Because
how old were you that?
I was 14. Then. I was 14 then. But with their relationship being broken within the household, I mean, there was lack of love, lack of connection. They didn't communicate. So, I mean, me as a kid, you know, being in that environment, but then my mom's back is falling apart in the process. So she has multiple bulging and ruptured discs. She's constantly in pain. I mean, all I remember as a kid was anytime she would run into anybody, the first bit of small talk that she would have with anybody would be, "Oh, how's your back doing?" It's like
real quick before we get super deep. At this point, you're 14, mm-hmm. So people know you have a younger sister.
I do,
and you're living with mom and dad.
She's 7.5 years younger than me,
so quite a bit younger. Mom had you when she was pretty young,
or 6.5 years. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, she had me when she was 21 years old. So
at this point, things are kind of rocky at home. Do you? Because I think a lot of people, when they go through these troubled times in relationships, they tend to think, and I've heard it, is like if they just keep it away from the kids won't notice. Did you notice these things?
Oh my God. It was, kids are smart people. I noticed everything. I can appreciate that they didn't, the one thing that they did do, they didn't argue in front of us or have fights in front of us, but the lack of love and the lack of communication, and they never touched each other. They never showed affection anymore. Like I noticed it. There was, and the biggest thing is us, I spent a lot of quality time with my mom. Like our quality time was laying in bed after I would come home from school and watching TV, because she was in so much pain all the time that she couldn't really do a whole lot. By the end of the day, she was so hurt. She was hurting and burnt out, and she did what she could. Like, I appreciate, you know, for as much pain as she was in all the time, she made it to all my games. She was a stay-at-home mom, but I mean, she made it to all my games. She was always there. Tried to always be there and be open and those sort of things. But, you know, there were things that were lacking, which really, really affected me.
Well, I'm gonna cut in real quick and mm-hmm. paint a little picture for people, because there's a gap, right? You're starting at 14 and you're in a unique position where you can notice the difference and how a relationship changed, because this is your dad isn't your biological father.
Yes.
So he came along later in your life. So you see the relationship in the beginning and what it looks like. And and then you see the evolution when it kind of falls off.
Absolutely. Correct. Yeah, my mom was a completely different person before. She was she kind of reminded me of myself, like the very bright, very driven, like she was a correctional officer, like, and then the kind of the thing that cascaded her into her major, major time with her back injuries was she got in a fight with a meth head at work, and it sent her into this, you know, collapse of just ongoing injuries. But my dad came into my life, I believe I was 5.5. And now, you know, we've built this relationship where, you know, the word stepdad is a bad word. Like, he's my dad. Like, I always say that, you know, anybody can be a father. It takes a certain person to be a dad and to earn that title of being a dad. So he is my dad. but going into their relationship, they did get pregnant with my sister, which is a blessing. And I think that, you know, their relationship was good at first. I don't really want to get too far into what happened when I was 14 because it was a really, really hard time. But essentially what happened is there was this supposed person that he was supposedly having a relationship with, but claimed to not, who was very close to our family. And it was essentially my mom's best friend at the time. So it was hard, essentially. It was really hard. But, I mean, he claimed that nothing happened and they moved on. But, you know, at that point, it was either they separated or they stayed together, and they chose to stay together for me and Victoria, yeah, or my sister. And, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there who get divorced, you know, and it's like, okay, do we stick it out for the kids? But, you know, ultimately, I'm glad they did stay together. But there definitely were, we could tell, there was a difference. It was.
I don't think sticking together is always the right answer. It depends, right? It's situational.
Very situational.
Like I know for with my childhood is with my stepdad and mom, if they were to have, the best thing they could have done was separate. And yeah. As kids, you feel the energy, you see the conflict, you see whatever going on, and like you said, kids aren't stupid.
Yeah.
And if kids see that, there's like kind of this misconception that from being an adult now and being a kid in that situation where parents are like, hey, it's probably better if we just stick together for the kids.
Yeah.
Kids would rather you not. Like it's hard because you got two houses and you got to like split time between people, but kids don't want to deal with that conflict and shit constantly. Like, and when you're at a certain age and if you're cognizant of it, that.
The thing though is there wasn't necessarily conflict. It was like they repressed everything. So there was just, it was the opposite where there was no emotion.
But that's what I mean. I'm saying in some situations it doesn't work. In this situation, it worked.
But it was dysfunctional. Yeah. It was the new dynamic was that we weren't this family unit. It was, I had a relationship with my mom and I had a relationship with my dad and we all lived in the same house. So I had this quality time with my mom, you know, laying in bed watching TV. But the thing is he wasn't there for her when it came to her injuries, nor did he understand and respect it, because then that responsibility fell on me indirectly, where I would be spending this quality time with my mom and she would be talking about how much she hurts. And there's a good while where there would, like, every other night she was sobbing to me either about her back hurting or just some sort of emotional situation with them or whatever it may be, where she's just constantly spilling over at the you know, the edges all the time. So that created an environment where, you know, at 14, I was listening to my mom go, you know, maybe it would just be easier if I just wasn't here anymore. Like, that was a constant theme for me to hear as this adolescent, for one, but then also too, it's like it was great bonding time because we were able to have that downtime together, but I had this gigantic adult-like emotional burden put onto me that, you know, a 14, 15, 16-year-old should not have to deal with. So literally it wasn't like, she felt like if she vented to her friends wouldn't be her friends anymore. And then that's literally all she really talked about with family. So it's like there were those times where she didn't feel like she could do that with her family there. And obviously she felt like she couldn't do that with her dad. So it all kind of fell on me. And I had to grow up really, really fast, for one. And for two, I became very hypersensitive to my own self-reflection and my own, how my own actions affected other people, which almost created an anxiety in a way. But at the same time, there was that side of it. I almost call it a Jekyll and Hyde kind of situation where she was this amazing mom in one second. But then during the day when we're up and going and all about, it's like she didn't have any room for constructive conversation or anything like that. So it was very like my way or the highway, very structured, very strict. And if anything was kind of out of line, it was either straight to yelling. It was like 1 to 100 in a snap of a finger. So I was constantly living on that thin ice, you know, having to walk on eggshells all the time around her sort of way of living, which kind of made me repress a lot of my own feelings because I didn't feel like I could share my own, you know, kid struggles with my own mom, because if I brought anything up that was slightly emotional, she would be breaking down into tears.
So I was going to ask, and just real quick, Kristen, if you have any questions and you want to just jump in, how did you, because at this age, you are, people see you, if you guys follow us, that you lift, you're athletic, you played multiple sports, you're a multi-sport athlete, you basically ran your own business with raising animals. So how did this affect you when it came to being on the field, when it came to your flock? Is it a flock?
Flock.
A gaggle of sheep. When it came to the sheep, when it came to being on the field, did you wear those things? Did you actively have to suppress it? Like, did it come out in your play? Did the emotions come out with the activities you were doing?
So the way my behavior translated over into all of those things was, I like to call it kind of like the Robin Williams effect, where I was so hyper happy, like all the time, because one, I didn't want anyone else to feel the way that I felt. And two, it was the repression of all of those bad feelings that I had to deal with, and that big emotional burden that I had to deal with, repressed it down. And it's funny because a lot of people would have called me outgoing, but there was a lot of time where I was very, very quiet. And translating over into sports and FFA and 4-H, I was very busy. I was a busy kid. And I think that kind of saved me in a way where I didn't even have the time to go and dive into or delve into any bad ways of coping with those things, because I was so busy. It was like, wake up, go to school, go to my sport, come home, do homework, feed the animals, go to bed. Like, maybe hang out with my mom a little bit, go to bed. Do the, you know, and then maybe some cleanup in there.
So did you find those more of an outlet or a way of not dealing?
They were my outlet for sure. But the thing is also the family dynamic also was like, we were all on a ranch, right? So it was my parents' house, which is a smaller house, up at the top of the ranch, is a 40-acre ranch. And my grandma's house was the main house, which is just about a football field away. And she was like, I love my mom, and she was there for me as a mom physically, but emotionally and spiritually, she was not there for me as a mom. If it wasn't for my grandma, I wouldn't be as level-headed as I am today, because she was the one who really took me to a lot of like the 4-H and FFA kind of stuff, and then kind of kept me busy, kept me, you know, taught me all of my financial knowledge and kind of those big adult lessons that need to be learned. And just, you know, chores is at 6. If you're here at 6:05, we're going to have a conversation about it kind of thing. Cause she was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. Like,
I love her already.
She was, she's an old war horse.
Ornery woman.
Ornery Scottish woman. My God. But
explains the sheep.
Yes, very much so. I mean, we did the whole traditional, like, call, like Scottish call for our sheep when they're like out in the trees and whatever to come in to feed, which is a high pitched howling noise.
It's a yodel, right?
No, it's not a yodel.
I kind of want an example.
What?
I kind of want an example.
Oh, no, I'll blow out people's eardrums.
I can turn down.
No, it's fine. I'm not going to. I haven't done it in a long time. But essentially,
we'll get a video on the Instagram.
Perfect.
Oh, my God.
Calling the dogs.
Yeah.
Hashtag oh, sheep.
Sheep collar. oh, my God. But when it came to, you know, FFA and 4-H, FFA was like, that was my adult thing that my friends didn't really, the few friends that I did have, didn't really understand, or my social circles didn't understand, because I did have these responsibilities as a kid, these adult-like responsibilities as a kid. And so I always felt like I was on the outside looking in when it came to, like, teenage social circles, because I didn't really understand. Like, I stayed out of drama. Like, that's a huge thing that my mom taught me, is stay out of drama. So I didn't really dive into that. So I didn't really understand, like, teenage culture, you know, because I was doing other things.
But yeah, you also lived in BFE.
I mean, was very, very isolated. Like, I was a feral child. But I grew up in the mountains.
Yeah, the ranch is on top of a mountain. So yes. You're
15-20 minutes out of town.
And not just out of town, but up a mountain in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So
I would, like,
And you went to high school 35 minutes away?
Yeah, I 30 commuted. Minutes away? Yeah. So I had to commute into high school. I mean, it's not every day that a teenager gets to, you know, walk out in the afternoon and go sit on top of a giant boulder and listen to a pack of coyotes, you know, down by the creek, you know, like, that was my Friday afternoon. So, I grew up very isolated, small circle of friends. And that was another thing with my grandma too. She was very, paranoid about people taking advantage of liabilities on the ranch. So I didn't really have a whole lot of people up there all the time. Like, I'd maybe have a friend over every once in a while. Because of that, that's another kind of strict thing that we had going on. But as far as getting into, like, the sports and stuff,
that's like your social circle then.
It was my social. Yeah. The events that I did, like 4-H, FFA, you know, sports, those were my social circles. Like, I didn't really get to hang out outside of those things a whole lot.
And what sports did you do?
I played soccer for 14 years, and I played softball for 6, and then volleyball in middle school. But that wasn't really a huge commitment, because I had to choose between soccer or volleyball going into high school. So,
and you were kind of good at softball.
Just a little bit. Yeah, no, I'm not going to toot my own horn, because that was, you know, back then, but
you got to live and own the accomplishments.
Yeah. That was, you know, first team all league, shortstop, like,
still holds a record at the high school.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I was expected.
Uncle Rico over here.
I was expected to play in college, didn't play in college, ended up going, you know, Air Force ROTC instead, which is a whole different story. I mean, we'll get there. But no, just kind of getting back into my mindset with sports was literally my outlet. Like, I almost felt bad at times after high school and stuff, because I was so honed in to, I was so honed into the sport itself and being better at the sport, that I kind of schluffed off my teammates. Like, I was a team player, and I would always, you know, pick up the person that was, you know, needed help or whatever it may be. But really, I was so tunnel visioned that I guarantee that I came off as super, super arrogant, like, thought I was the shit, like, and those sorts of really extreme behaviors when it comes to those things. But internally, I felt like I was humbled, but I really wasn't, in a way. But dealing with my mom's stuff, it was the combination of repressing feelings where I was just kind of quiet, and then having that as an outlet, because that physical exertion, I feel like I kind of owe that I was the best in my sports to the emotional repression, because I was mad all the time.
That was your driving force.
I was mad all the time, and I didn't know it. I didn't, because I didn't know any other emotion. I didn't know that that was a regular emotion that I was feeling. It was not you're not supposed to feel like that. But
you're also a young teenager, right? Hormones are changing and none of that makes sense. So
no, so my normal is not normal.
Yeah. You're not registering all those changes or you're not registering all those things on top of the changes where other people don't have that same, right? All that anger and all that stuff. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was never diagnosed or anything like that, but guaranteed I probably had anxiety in there and those sorts of things, maybe sprinkled in a little depression, but who knows? Like I didn't know that I had those things because it was just a constant, I felt it all the time. So I thought it was normal, essentially. So, which is not good, but
unless you're the Hulk.
Unless you're the Hulk. Yeah. Which I definitely was not. I thought I was, but I definitely wasn't. You know, I thought it was just, I was, cause coming from a military family, I mean, and my mom being a correction officer and that sort of that mentality of like, you know, just suck it up and do it, suck it up and do it. And you just grind it out, like no complaining, no whining. Like that was sort of my household environment, was just like, just do it, like just get it done. And so I was constantly working, constantly playing sports. Obviously, I had school sprinkled in there, but it was kind of not my real, it's not a huge focus for me. I had to, you know, keep good grades, but it was kind of like an afterthought. But really getting into kind of coming out of that, I played soccer my senior year. I ended up getting injured. I hurt my knee in a rival game, and dad took me to the hospital. The doctor said that I had a partial tear and that it was recoverable. But that was a huge, huge humbling moment, right? Because humbling moment for one, but a part of my identity was essentially the only thing that I had, right? Sports, school, and FFA. Those were my big three. And so a third of my identity, which was my main focus, was essentially just ripped away from me the last year that I was really supposed to play the sport. So going into knee rehab,
you had to have surgery, correct?
No. So the doctor said, oh, you just have a partial tear or ligament, I don't want to say extension, but where it kind of pulls. And he's like, oh, you can recover from this. Just do some rehab and you'll be good to go. So, you know, did a rehab throughout the rest of the season. This was at the very beginning of soccer season. So we're looking at like late fall or mid fall. And I was able to play my last senior year of softball. No problem. I just didn't really have any, transverse abilities, when it comes to movement. So, yeah, I was able to play out, softball, and then I graduated, right? So after that, you know, I had a learning curve of, you know, going balls to the wall all the time. Like my motto was, I make a mistake and the next time I do that, I better get it right. Like I was not kind to myself when it came to mistakes. I was very much a perfectionist. So having that injury really brought me down a little bit to go, okay, you need to slow down in order to heal. But it was not easy. But then, you know, graduation happened and all of a sudden sports gone. FFA over. School over. Everything that I identified or were my identifiers as who I was gone. So I was very, very lost. And then those feelings that I was carrying, those emotions that I was carrying and that emotional burden that I was carrying for my mom, you know, continued because she was still dealing with a lot of stuff. And at this point, you know, their relationship got a little worse. And I was living at my mom's house or my grandma's house because I chose to not. I was like, I'm 18. I'm out. So I lived at my grandma's for a while. And that was where I got very, very lost. And that I always had that those anxiety and depression feelings where I thought it was my baseline and I didn't know I had them. So I had a job. I was, you know, started going back to school and I was training for collegiate softball at the time. And I literally did it for a semester and I was like, just not in it anymore. Like I wasn't feeling it. And I don't know if it was that short period of time where I just didn't have any of that. So then I was feeling those down feelings, kind of isolated myself. And then I got into trying everything across the spectrum of like, at the time I was in Air Force ROTC after I tried out softball, cause that's kind of what I knew. And then I got into Air Force ROTC and now, I met a guy and we kind of hit it off and we are just getting done with uniform inspections and we're about to head out to our next, you know, thing on the agenda for today, you know, in ROTC. And I do an about face and my knee gives out. And turns out, you know, my mentor took me to the emergency room and it turns out that the doctor who evaluated me for my knee when I was 17 was wrong. I had completely torn my ACL back then and because there was some residual scar tissue. And then in the second injury, I completely tore off one side of my meniscus, completely ripped off the entire bone and flipped over onto the other side of my meniscus. So I was out and the relationship with the boy kind of got thrown off onto the side and I was living at my grandma's house and I had surgery and then moved back into my parents' house. Which was, and to throw it on, kind of throw another factor into kind of the environment of my parents' house was that it was not a tidy house. The fact that my mom had her back stuff and my dad was kind of tapped out mentally, like it was a mess all the time. Like I was the house cleaner growing up, essentially. So I was walking back into that environment, coming out of surgery. And I gained a whole bunch of weight. And that was kind of the last shred of identity that I had was I still had my athletic abilities. You know, I was still coming, had those abilities. So that was stripped away from me as well. And so it really weighed down on me mentally. So recovering from surgery, I came out 30 pounds heavier, 30, 40 pounds heavier, which to me was at the time was devastating. I did not have as attuned athletic abilities. So that was really hard to figure out how to get back into.
So real quick, what was the surgery? Like what did it entail? And what was,
so they were able to pin my meniscus back down, thankfully, because usually in meniscus surgeries, there's like a piece that's flapping off and they just cut it off. And then you have bone on bone and then you can get arthritis. Thankfully, they were able just to pin my entire meniscus back down and I had a complete ACL repair. So between those two, that was it.
What's projected recovery time? And downtime.
They said 6 months, but that's bullshit. It was a year.
6 months is probably until you're really kind of moving again.
Yeah. I mean, when I was off the crutches and walking again, it felt like my knee was going to hyperextend every time I took a step. Ooh. It was the weirdest feeling. And I couldn't really, the nature of my injury was a pivot injury. So anytime I turned around, like an about face would be, or like took a step, like a pivot backwards, I felt like my knee was just going to twist and snap off. So it was a very interesting experience as far as that goes. And being 19 at the time and having an injury, and kind of having this like Hercules type ego of like, I can do anything, you know, bring on the world sort of mentality.
Where were you at mentally in recovery? I've never had surgery. I'm pretty sure I've broken multiple bones. I'm just a stubborn ass, and I don't go to the. You've known me since we've been together. I've gone for a injury, and you know how well I do when I'm injured. How easy it is to keep me down and can't keep me immobile.
Now that I've gone through what I've gone through, I know how to deal with you if you ever get injured. Yeah.
So your mentality, when you're recovering, how long was it till you could move?
God.
Like how long were you?
I think a couple months, 8 weeks. 8 weeks I was in.
Pretty bedridden.
Yeah.
8 weeks.
Wow.
And what was your mental state? Like what's going through your head, because now you're back at your parents, right? Or were you at grandma's?
I was at my parents' house.
So you're back recovering. You're back with them recovering. It's a mess. Things aren't great, and you can't get up and you can't escape it. Not to mention you have a sister who at that time is in her terrible teens.
Yeah, she was very. She did not repress. Let's just say that she showed.
She's very outspoken.
Yes, her aggression and anger was. We knew about it.
So, what are you? Where are you at mentally? What's going through your head as you're stuck in bed? House is a mess. You're stuck with your parents, and you can't do the things that are you.
Horrible. Horrible. I mean, I was in a twin size bed with stuff stacked up next to me, a foot away from me, and there was a walking trail out of the spare room. Like, it was just a room full of stuff and nothing to look at. Like, my dad really took care of me when I had my surgery. Like, they do a nerve block in your hip. So your nerves essentially turn off during surgery, but then the feeling of the re-engagement of your nerves, that was the worst part. And I was literally writhing in pain, and my dad was sitting right there with me trying to help me go through it. So there was the physical pain, but I mean, I'm at that time, I was a busybody. I needed to be up. I felt useless. My self-worth was none. Like everything, like I said, all of my identifiers and who I was gone. Like I felt worthless. I'm very much a service, giving my service type of person. And I wasn't able to do that. And especially like at the time I found something that I loved with ROTC, and I was headed in that finally headed in the right direction. And it, again, it was kind of ripped away from me. So
how did you get through that?
Through recovery.
Mentally, how did you, with all that shit going through your head, what grounded you and kept you?
So at this time, it was a huge turning point for me. And this is where Balance and Manifest kind of comes in. Because I did my essentials, you know, recovered. And then when I was walking, I got back to work. And through this time was when I was home, I was just in my room. I didn't really go out and socialize. Like, I didn't really know how to, as far as like spending time with friends. I never initiated. If I got invited, I would go, but I was never one to initiate because I was never really taught those skills. Because I was so isolated growing up. So when I didn't have anything else to do, I would just be at home by myself in my own head. And essentially having my mom go through what she went through with her back, my why, kind of fast forwarding to the gym, and my why for just living life in general is because this is, you know, 20 years of her being a mom and being in bed, being a mom and being in bed. And so my why is one, to not be like that, because she's alive, but she's not living. So my why is to actually actively live with intent. And that was essentially what I was trying to find. What does that look like? And what does that look like for me? I didn't grow up religious. I didn't really have any structure now that I didn't have any of those identifiers anymore. Those were gone. Those were stripped away. So I literally started at ground zero of who I was and who I wanted to be.
So real quick for people listening, because this will come up a lot in our shows. When we say my why or what was your why, explain to people what you mean by your why, because there's some people who are going to be listening that don't understand what that means.
So a lot of the time in the gym, and in my case, I was relating it to life at the time, is when you're beaten down and you don't want to go and you don't want to do it, or there's just, you're not motivated, like that good feeling of going just isn't there. And you need to find a reason to go when you don't want to go. And that is what we mean by what is your why, because you have to reference back to that to go, God dang it, like, I'm going to go because I'm thinking, you know, really, truly, intentfully thinking about your why and remembering that.
It's that thing that gets you out of bed in the morning when you want to hit your snooze button at 5:30 in the morning and you didn't sleep because your dog is snoring and your baby's smacking you in the head at 3 o'clock in the morning.
It was amazing.
And your wife just lets it happen and your alarm goes off at 5:30 and you go, I don't want to go to the gym. And your why is that, all right, here we go. If I don't go, I'm going to feel like crap because of this. This is why I go. This is why I do the things that I do. And this is why I want to be a better person. This is why. This is my why.
Yeah. And I apologize in telling my story. It's very hard for me to talk about. I truly am a person that I don't like talking about myself and I don't like talking about my own feelings. So if I'm kind of delaying within my story, I apologize, because this is really, really hard for me to talk about. Cause I haven't talked about it in a really long time because I've healed from all of it. So kind of revisiting it is, I'm trying to get the chronological timeline straight. But at this time, like I said, Balance and Manifest was born. In this time of really, I was at ground zero. I was literally trying to create my own structure and a baseline of who I was. And it's going to sound silly, but I had so many constant, like, negative energy coming towards me all the time. And this, I was still carrying this emotional burden, because even through my recovery, my mom was still unleashing her own emotional burdens with her injuries. And I couldn't talk about my injuries because she was talking about hers all the time. So I didn't have room for my own emotions.
You didn't have an outlet for it.
No. Where before I had, you know, my business and my sports. So literally when I was at home by myself, I was always in my head, and I had, you know, really that why of, okay, I'm alive, but I'm in that phase of, like, my mom, I wasn't living. So, okay, I don't want to be in this spot. What do I need to do to not be in this spot? And something that I kind of toot my own horn about is I've always, like I said, I kind of really have that self-reflective state of mind stemming from, you know, that emotional burden that I carried and had to kind of grow up quickly. So constantly self-reflecting, and I would, it's going to sound silly, but every morning I would wake up and I would type into the Google search engine and go and type in positive quotes. And I would start my day out by reading like 20 quote, like positivity quotes. And I just really restructuring my brain to think positively. Unfortunately, in that process, I did still repressed and kind of created a toxic positivity of way of living where I couldn't even talk about negative stuff. Like it was all positive. It was all positive, but that didn't come out till later. But the balance and manifest part really came in when I kind of went into a spiritual mindset of taking things from different ways of living, essentially. I think the biggest one were like chakras. There was that part, and then there was the emotional discipline part of like sins and virtues and who I wanted to be, and just being balanced in that way, physically, mentally, and spiritually. So that's where the balance part comes in. And then the manifest side of it, balance was stemming with from all those things and that way of living. And then the manifest part is literally, I'm alive, but am I living? That is the manifest side of it. So I'm using all of these tools to recreate myself through balance and manifest. And so essentially, yes, you know, I'm alive but not living is my why, but really balance and manifest is my why. I always go back to that to make sure that I am balanced in those things. And now that we have the business, we balance it through, have our balance with our quote unquote nine realms through the gym. And at this time, I'm finally, you know, it's been almost 8 months or whatever from my recovery, and I'm walking back into ROTC, and you know, the cutie pie that I had waiting on the side, I actually became my boyfriend, and I moved into his parents' house. So kind of getting into my gym.
It's not me, by the way.
It's not you. Yeah. Sorry, babe.
Ouch. So this is awkward. I'm just kidding.
He's chair force. You know, I've been holding that one in.
I know. We have a Marine on our hands, people. So he became my boyfriend. I moved into his parents' house. We were on the bottom floor. And then his parents were on the top floor, but led me back into the light essentially when it came to physical activity, because his parents were bodybuilders. He was a bodybuilder. They did shows and all that in their youth and had all these trophies all around their house. And his dad was a machine every day at the same time. It's gym time, everyone in the truck. And we all went to the truck every single day. We went to the gym. And I will tell you, I've seen some people with animalistic behavior. As soon as that man walks into the gym, he's like, head down, don't talk to me or I'll yell at you. Like, I'm doing my workout, leave me alone. And Cameron would, name dropped my boyfriend at the time. He would work out with his dad, and I would work out sometimes with his mom, and his mom would kind of show me how to do things. And that's really where my passion for the gym came into play. And they unknowingly developed my discipline for the gym because he was just on it.
Was this your first introduction to a gym?
No, I will say my parents owned a gym when I was younger, but I wasn't into it. Like, it was just my parents had a gym because my dad was a professional powerlifter when he was younger. So that was kind of my first quote unquote introduction to it. And I think I went to the gym with him maybe a couple times. I will say that he did teach me a lot of the like bodily mechanics, but when it actually came to executing said plan in the gym, my boyfriend's parents really instilled that in me. And it's funny looking back now because it's just amazing how you never know how people will come into your life and change it, but they're only in your life for a short time. So if they're listening at any point in time, I want to thank you because it really stemmed my love for the gym and discipline. And then I could really hone back into those disciplines that I had with sports and use that. And then I always say my mom's situation is a bittersweet situation because there were so many dark times with that, but I learned so much from it. And I still stem from those things that I learned emotionally and mentally from my mom's situation. So coming through that, we broke up because we kind of just grew.
Because your kids?
We grew apart.
Because the universe wanted you to meet Sean.
Essentially, yeah. You were the next one, babe. So, careful when you use the term kid.
That's true.
We grew apart. I ended up, 2 months before I was supposed to contract, I didn't end up doing RTC. And I went to fashion school for like 4 weeks, thought it was stupid. Yeah, this was a time where I literally tried everything because I had no clue what I wanted to do with life. Because another kind of mental factor for me was like, I always heard it and I always wanted to live by it, where it's like, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I was like, yes. I'd always think about that when it came to figuring out
what I wanted. I love clothes, so if I do.
No, that was not it. Thank you very much. No, but I wasn't going to spend $40,000 at a school that wasn't credible coming out of it. And I realized that learning basic math and paying $40,000 a year is not conducive for a future. So, moving on from that, I literally tried everything under the sun. Like after that, I moved home. That's when I really started avidly going to the gym, and that was my thing. I ended up moving in. I got a job at Buckle, and I ended up moving in with my manager, and we had the time of our lives, man. It was so fun. Like, we did everything together. We, went out all the time.
Shout out to JB.
And,
well, so when you're in the gym, what was your training? Because you come from a powerlifting background, and then you got reintroduced through like a bodybuilding training.
Yeah.
So what was your.
So I kind of combined everything, right? I didn't really have like a set rep scheme knowledge. Like, I didn't have that knowledge. My biggest thing was
going to pick stuff up and put it down.
Yeah. No. So
the only way to do it.
the one thing I knew how to do really well was to push myself to 100% and then push farther. So I went into the gym with that mentality. Like, I'm going to do it until it hurts, and then I'm going to do 20 more. So I kind of had, and then I kind of had the athletic structure when it came to like structuring a workout. So I would jump on the treadmill for a mile, and then I would do, and it's insane thinking back now because I train so differently now, which obviously I should, but back then I was doing like 7 exercises for like 3 by 15s. Like, it was a lot. Too much. And then I would do another 15 minutes. My core circuit was 4 exercises, 20 reps each. And then all 4 exercises was 1 set. And then I would do 4 sets.
I just want to interject real quick. So you said you would, and I find it interesting, you would go to 100% and then you would push past that. Mm-hmm. So you would find the end of your comfort zone, mm-hmm. and you would break through that. One of my favorite quotes is Ronnie Coleman. And Ronnie Coleman has a countless number of quotes, but is when you hit failure, your workout has just begun.
Yeah.
And so what most people don't understand is when you go to the gym, it doesn't matter what you're doing, running or rowing or bench press or CrossFit or whatever your discipline is, if you're doing what's comfortable, you're not going to grow. And I don't mean doing what's comfortable like position wise, right? Like form, but like weight wise or distance. If you can comfortably run 3 miles and that's all you run and you don't push it further, then you're not going to grow.
Yeah.
So you instinctual, did somebody teach you that or was that just an instinctual?
No, because that was a part of me growing up in athletics of like, that was a part of my almost like, I don't want to say animalistic instincts, but it was kind of that driving force, that I used as a coping mechanism to release the energy that I was holding in with the emotional burden. It was all about feeling like, if it makes me feel good, I'm gonna push myself to the brink of collapse. Like, in that discipline of, I'm gonna make one skill, I'm only gonna give myself one chance to make one mistake, and then I better fix it right after that. And generally, sometimes I did it, sometimes I didn't, but I was constantly pushing my mental state to that 100% of, you better fix it next time. And so I carried that over into the gym, but through my injuries and stuff, I kind of lost that. And then my boyfriend's dad kind of reinstilled that in me, watching him move through the gym of just like this go, 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 go until you are done. And so I carried that back into the gym itself, which sometimes isn't always conducive for a good workout, because I would overtrain. I definitely did overtrain, which at the time I'm much more versed and educated in the gym itself and training and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I carried that with me, and I like to work out alone. I did work out with JB, but ultimately I love to work out alone. And I think at the beginning of our relationship, you would get mad at me because I didn't want to work out with you, and you would get so upset.
I still do.
I know.
Ouch.
I really, because the thing is the gym is my anchor for my mental state, like for my mental health.
And I'm her ball and chain.
Like, I love working out with you, honey, but I just don't get my optimal workout.
Because I want to talk to you because I have 9 million things going through my head. And that's the thing. I can't shut the hell up.
And that's the thing, is there has to be one in every relationship, right? I'm not a talker. If someone talks to me, I'll talk to them and I'll be open. But he will walk up to anybody and start a conversation about anything.
It's not true.
And then repeat it 3 times.
That's not true. I'm actually pretty reserved and quiet and keep to myself. But then when I get to know you,
you can't get enough. Shut up.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. I love him for that though, because the thing is I really, growing up the way I did, I have people skills, but I say it to my friend all the time, because we are on the same wavelength of, I'm an outgoing introvert where I'll go and do things and I want to be active and do things, but I won't talk to anyone in the process until someone talks to me, and then I'll start talking, because I'm just in this, again, tunnel vision of just doing it.
So I don't want to get too much into us meeting and our relationship. Because I kind of want to save that for part two of yours and ours.
To give a time frame, I met Sean at 21 years old. Was in that, you know,
gym flow. I was flow. Also 21 my optimal, years old.
I love, no, you were not.
Lies.
He is 9 years older than me. Yeah. But it's funny because my optimal time to go to the gym, I don't know what it was. I loved going to the gym at like 11 p.m. and getting and finishing at like 2 a.m.
Dang.
I don't know why. At that time, I know, being, you know, 20, 21 years old, like, it was fine.
So we'll go into a little bit. So we meet, and we're not going to go into that story. We'll probably go into that at some point. But our basically first date was back day.
Yeah.
At the gym. And that's where I really learned your dedication and focus on gym and fitness and your passion and love for it where did that transition to, I want to take this to the next level and do something with this professionally?
Oh, gosh. You know, at that time, I kind of exhausted all of the things that I thought that I was good at, you know, because I had that 3-year period where I tried a little bit of everything, trying to hone my skills and everything that I acquired through FFA and athletics and my education, and then obviously my family history. But it all came back to just being physically active. And a lot of me being physically active too did stem from living on a ranch, for one. And I mean, essentially I was not supervised. So I was a kid in a forest all the time by myself. Like, I literally was a feral child. So,
the wild thornberries.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, though, I did educationally outside of high school. For my background with my mom and, learning animal behavior as well, I went into my major of psychology. So that really helped help me leading into training. Because I don't know why I thought it, because everyone was like, oh yeah, you should do this. You should do this. And I was like, nah, I'm going to go try this. Like, everyone was telling me to do this, but I was like, nah, I'm going to go over here and try this because I want to. Cause I wanted to eliminate all those things that I thought I wanted. And now I'm to a point where I'm full circle coming back into training. And then I had finished out my A in psychology, and now I was going back to school for kinesiology. And in that time, I was like, okay, now I'm going to commit, because I wanted to be a physical therapist at the time. And I started training just to obviously make money and got to pay the bills. So I did that, but I ended up burning myself at both ends. I mean, if anyone's taken an anatomy course, they know with cadavers, it is hard. And at that time, I was training at the same time with a full schedule, and it just was not. I ended up not training. And I had worked at a restaurant, and so I had gone back to that because it was easy. It was mindless.
And you also didn't have the greatest situation training wise.
No, I mean, it was a huge project. It was a brand new gym in this big, you know, multi-activity center kind of deal. So they had a lot on their plate as far as meeting certain goals. And that just wasn't, I didn't like working under somebody. And I think coming around full circle now that I'm getting back into training now and starting my own business is much more conducive for my brain and just who I am as a person. Because I wanted to train a certain way, but I couldn't because they had their sales strategy that they wanted to go off of or whatever, and they had to hit their marks.
You were essentially a salesman.
Yeah, and I did not like training. That. I did not like that because I am all about the people. I'm very much a people person when it comes to training, because one, it's really intimate, and finding out, again, body, mind, spirit, where, yeah, someone may want to have a physical goal, but you also have to dive into their psychological state of being, because there may be roadblocks there that's hindering their physical performance. And so, but I wasn't in an environment that I could do that, or felt that I could do that. So I ended up stopped training for a while, which, looking back now, was a bummer. For sure. But, you know, I led into other things for a short time, which was, again, great for learning new skills and stuff like that. I'm not going to get into that. But now coming around full circle, I'm in a better spot. And now, again, I went back to school and got into sociology a little bit, which is another building block to building skills going into this profession. So I feel like I'm coming into it at the right time as a well-rounded person. I've learned a lot throughout the years. Even though I haven't practiced it professionally, I've practiced it personally at a professionally academic level. I mean, it's all there. just the knowledge is sitting there. I just got to use it.
So one thing we're going to do on each of these episodes is we're going to end the episode with going to give our guest, in this case, it's you, because we're talking about you, a minute. And spoiler alert, I don't record the minute, so
yeah,
it's a loose minute, quote unquote. you have a minute, and if you could leave people with some tips, some advice, something impactful that you think could help people, in that minute, what would you tell people?
You have a choice. Oh my gosh, there were a multitude of times where I just could have completely fallen apart. But it's I don't know if it's an instinctual thing that someone just has, or if it's, you know, reprogramming your brain to think and be a certain way is a practice. And if you don't like who you are or what you are doing, change it. Choose to change it. And if you say you can't, it's bullshit. Because find the tools, learn about those tools and how they're going to work best for you, and change it. And I know that sounds very harsh, but there's always a choice, no matter what the circumstances.
So what you're trying to say is nothing changes
if nothing changes. Absolutely.
I like that.
It's one of my favorite quotes. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to the very first episode. Don't forget to subscribe, like, listen, share. Again, if you can guys give us a rating so we can blow this thing up, get these stories out to as many people as possible, we would appreciate it. And would like to thank our sponsor, Nine Realms Athletics, ninerealmsathletics.com. Follow on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. Use promo code MANIFEST for a discount. And we are always open for suggestions. So if you guys know anybody who has a really cool story, or cool, quote unquote, or a tragic story, something they're willing to share, something that could help other people, if they are able to get it out to people, let us know. If you have a story, let us know. You DM us or email. If you know us, text message. If you see me at the gym, come tap on my shoulder or smack me in the side of the head, because my headphones are probably too loud and I won't hear you. So, but we're approachable. Let us know if you guys know anybody. Kristen, thank you for joining.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It was fun. Yay. Savannah's weird.
That was rough.
You good?
Feelings.
Well, thank you guys for tuning into our first episode, and we will see you on the next one.
Thanks, guys.